Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening. This is L.A. Still. And tonight we're going to continue our discussion, or the article by Paul Levy, which is called Are We Possessed? I'm not exactly sure if I really covered this part yesterday. Last week. Completely, but sometimes you can't. Sometimes I mark things, but realize that they're not. I hadn't really completed it. There's about five more pages of this article left to read, and I wanted to make it clear because we're going into an area now of group possession or collective psychosis, and I just want to I may have touched on this last week, but I think it's important to repeat the last few paragraphs here. Before we get into that field, because it leads up to it, collective psychosis, or a collective possession, if you will, how we become a nationally paranoid, and how we become obsessed and patriotic, and all these things. Not that it's all bad, but that it's that some things are, and some things have to be watched. We have to watch for these within our own psyches, that we're not we don't become overwhelmed by this national prejudice or national fervor to kill people and to go to war and to invade countries and to pollute and take advantage of other countries, which is what we do, unfortunately, and other countries do the same thing. But it's done from a national acceptance. And let me go on. I'm reading "Are We Possessed?" By Paul Levy, and we're now on page. We're entering the last few pages of this particular article. And if you want to go back to the first two parts, which were on October 8th and October 15th. They are now in the archives and they're on our show page. You can get the gist of the whole article. Maybe there's a hidden reason in the deeper plan of things why we as a species have a tendency to be taken over by our unconscious. Jung points out that autonomous complexes are among the normal phenomena of life and that they make up the structure of the unconscious psyche. Having autonomous complexes or having a spare demon or two in our closet is a normal human phenomenon, something we all possess at the same time that it possesses us. Identifying with our unconscious such that we act it out, or being possessed, seems to be a natural expression of the human experience. Might there be a hidden evolutionary potential, an underlying teleology, or a mysterious purpose or goal that is possessing us to act as we do? Again, if you heard the second part, and I'm repeating this only because it leads to the significance of the national or the collective psychosis that we'll be getting into. Perhaps we are being dreamed up to be the very instruments and midwives through which the archetypes transform themselves, the world and ourselves as well. And becoming possessed by the unconscious is paradoxically the way we learn how not to be possessed, which is clearly haven't learned yet, or we wouldn't be possessed. By differentiating ourselves from the archetype, we take it conscious, while creating ourselves relative to it. Excuse me. In relating to the archetype consciously, we do not fall under the thrall of the archetype, but are able to mediate, humanize, and channel its transpersonal energies and contents, in a constructive, creative, and life-enhancing way. As we connect with each other through our lucidity, we can potentially become a vehicle through which the archetypes themselves transform and evolve, which instantaneously and non-locally has a transformative and evolutionary effect through the entire collective field of consciousness. And you can understand that when you receive, especially to, and if we have time tonight, I'm going to talk. I'm going to read a segment on intuition, and from Ian Lungle regarding the lectures that he gave. Mythologically speaking, the figure of the would-be hero, which is all of us in potential, is always inhabited by a daemon. Having a daemon taking up residence. It's like a daemon. It's not a demon so much, but it is an entity taking up residence inside of us is the very thing that makes us a hero. Our heroic fight against the paralyzing grip of a daemon is initiatory, in that it calls forth our latent creative powers. In coming to terms and wrestling with our daemon, which is to say ourselves, we create ourselves. The daemon is the source of all creativity. It takes genuine courage to do battle with these internal forces, and wrest from them the mythic treasure hard to attain, which is none other than our soul-filled selves. Young comments, as the result of the political situation and the frightful, not to say diabolic, triumphs of science, we are shaken by secret shudders and dark forebodings, but we know no way out, and very few persons indeed draw the conclusion that this time the issue is the long-since-forgotten soul of man. When we realize an archetype, such as the daemonic, we are able, from the inside out, to channel its transpersonal power into a creative, soulful, life-giving spirit that comes from a source beyond our ego. Encoded in the daemonic is everything we need for our healing and self-realization, as if the daemonic is a compensation of the deeper unified and unifying field of consciousness, offering us exactly what is required for us to wake up. The demons are the psychic Nautilus machines that are dreaming up to help us develop our muscles of realization, alchemically transmuting on the spot the potential destructiveness of the demonic into stimulators of our own creative lucidity. We give birth to our daemon, our guiding spirit, or rather, in that moment, our daemon gives birth to us. I want to interject something here, but I think the next paragraph clears it pretty well. Realizing an archetype such as a daemonic is to realize ourselves as an active, participatory agent in the creation of our experience of ourselves relative to the world. This realization comes with great responsibility. We are offered a choice. Either we continue to destroy ourselves, or we learn together how to create a new world. And everything depends upon our recognizing what is being revealed to us as we act our unconscious out in the world. The emergence of the demonic in our world is both potentially and actually the doorway into the revelation of the light. Being a function of our consciousness, how the demonic materializes as the deepest destructive evil or as creative genius depends upon nothing other than how we dream it. And Jung comments that the archetype is spirit or anti-spirit. What it ultimately proves to be depends upon the attitude of the human mind. So we have to expect, we have to understand that the demonic is rather a neutral entity in the sense that how it works through, it has to work through us. We create it, or we, I say it's created, it's already there, but we accept it within us either to strengthen us or to allow it to overwhelm us, okay? And in both ways, you can see this in the collective consciousness as well as the individual, how these particular powers, if you will, or demons, as they call, are there, and they're there everywhere, and they're all around you. They're all there everywhere. We exist in a third dimensional reality because so we block out those the essence. But it, as we progress and as we ascend to a higher consciousness and a higher vibratory level and a higher frequency that we will soon be existing, and if in 2012 that does occur as it's predicted, then these we will be seeing them. We'll be extremely aware, either fearfully or comfortably, of the spirit world. And it's up to us to accept that they do exist. It does exist. A higher consciousness does exist. God, I mean, if anything, if anyone just looks upon their own progression from a child to an adult, how much more aware we are or should be of our world and our surroundings and the higher concepts of religion and philosophy and metaphysics and so on, then that shows that we are progressive. We are a progressive, evolving being, and so it's only right, in logic, that we would progress beyond where we are now. And of course we die, everybody dies physically. So what happens there? Well, there's proofs that there are many, many proofs that there is another world beyond this third dimension. And that's where these spirits live. And once we can go beyond here, beyond this prison, if you will, this prison planet, this third dimensional reality, all of this will be understood. We'll be understanding this. It'll come to us, these things. And the millions of people who intuitively know, billions, I should say, who intuitively know and understand the spirit guide, the Godhead, the concept of a higher spirit. They pray, they meditate, they chant, they do things to bring about these meditative states which evoke the higher consciousness, that evoke spirits, good or evil, and however you wish to channel them. When we become possessed by the unconscious, we become unconsciously taken over by our primal animal-like instincts in such a way that we regress, devolve, and fall into our lower nature. Jung elaborates, only the animal man can be possessed. It is easier to talk or to argue with a dog or a cow than with someone possessed by such a figure. And if you ever talk to somebody about politics or religion, or a real hammerhead, you know okay, that it's easier to talk to a dog, to argue with a dog, because some people are they're possessed by these concepts that, they believe. And for nothing that one says permeates, it is impossible to pierce the wall they put up. It is a wall of unconscious beliefs, and people behind the wall cannot be reached. They are totally inaccessible. There is no access because the human being is degraded to the state of an animal, and a thing that seems to function is not a divine being, it is a ghost. I imagine we all know people like this, people who are under a spell such that there is really no talking with them, as they perversely take in and interpret whatever reflection is being offered of their unconscious as evidence of the right of their deluded point of view. So people who are naturally aggressive, people who are naturally warring type of people who are angry with the world, you can't discuss things normally with them, especially about war or politics or philosophy or religion, because they're just totally and utterly convinced. Psychologically speaking, they are possessed, as if an entity has taken them over. They are no longer there. They are no longer there, and they have no idea, literally, of their situation. When a group of people in this condition enter into agreement about the truth and become card-carrying members of a dogmatic ism, a collective psychosis is being brewed in the cauldron of the collective unconscious. And that's when you have cults develop. That's when you have political parties and idealism and that that blocks out all others and all other thought processes, and then you're essentially possessed by a concept, or possessed by a leader, or possessed by you being Jim Jones or a Catholic Church, Protestant Church, Islam, Judaism. They're all cults, basically. They're all mind-controlling cults and collective psychosis. And that's what religions are. They're designed to be that way. Politics are the same way. Join this party. If you believe this, this is dogmatic truth. I personally am an independent. I always have been an independent my entire political life. I believe there's good and bad on both sides, and I've been an atheist. I can't say atheist. I've been a non-denominational believer most of my life, say from 18 onwards. I believe that there's no religion has the answer, and most of them are all controlled. I may, I'll listen to them, I'll, discuss things with them rationally, but, these are things that I have, beliefs I've believed, but I don't wish to push them on everybody, and if you have your beliefs, then fine. I think it's open for discussion. This part is called the collective psychosis. Jung never tired of warning that the greatest danger that faces humanity is to unwittingly fall into our unconscious en masse, such that we become instruments for a psychic epidemic to wreak havoc in the world. Just like we see today, Jung writes that psychic epidemics are infinitely more devastating than the worst of natural catastrophes. The supreme danger, which threatens individuals as well as whole nations, is a psychic danger. We are in the midst of a collective psychosis that has become so normalized that very few people are even talking about it, which is itself an expression of our collective madness. Collective psychosis, Jung writes that collective psychoses are based on a constellated archetype through although, of course, this fact is not taken into account at all. In this respect, our attitude is still characterized by a prodigious unconsciousness. Once these archetypical contents become activated in the unconscious, Jung elaborates, it is like they have taken possession of certain individuals, irresistibly draw them together by mutual attraction and knit them into small or large groups which may easily swell into an avalanche. And people who have fallen into their unconscious naturally attract and connect with each other as they reciprocally reinforce each other's madness. An impenetrable bubble of shared, rigid beliefs gets conjured up around them, which deflects and resists any self-reflection which threatens their fixed worldview. And anyone who reflects back their unconscious state is demonized and seen as a heretic, blasphemer, and enemy. Though using individuals as its instrument, evil needs the unconscious masses for its genesis and proliferation into the world stage. Masses are always breeding grounds of psychic epidemics. In a collective psychosis, there is a herd mentality where people stop thinking for themselves and let others think for them, like sheep or sheeple, who just follow wherever they are being led. And Jung writes that whoever buys into the collectively agreed upon groupthink is infected with the leprosy of collective thinking and has become an inmate of the insalubrious stud farm called the totalitarian state. When we give away our power, there is always someone bearing the authority of the state who is more than happy to accept our offering, feeding the insatiable will to power of the shadow. In Jung comments, the shepherd's staff soon becomes a rod of iron, and the shepherds turn into wolves. And being archetypical, the reciprocal process of people giving away their power to others who abuse it simply because they can, has continually recreated itself as throughout history. And we do this now. We did it under the Patriot Act. We're doing it under NAFTA. We're doing it under all of these things. And there's an upcoming problem that we're facing as a nation that is called the Copenhagen Agreement Treaty. And it's about to be possibly signed in December, which would give away our complete sovereignty as a nation. And this is unimaginable. But we're being led there. We're being led into it by this groupthink, this indifference, this trust in your government attitude. And we've already seen that our government is possessed, okay, by its power, by its greed, by its ignorance, by its insanity, total insanity we're seeing, this country, this government. And the people know it. The people are rising up and understanding this. However, because they're not... they're not believing it. They're thinking individually, but they know this is not right. Intuitively, they understand this is not right, what is happening. And we're not being represented properly by our government. Jung warns us that the most dangerous thing in the world are immense accumulations of human beings who are manipulated by only a few heads. This is what we are... In a collective psychosis, the many are manipulated by the few who are attracted to holding power over others. Jung points out that whoever prefers power is therefore, in the Christian view, possessed by the devil. And the psychologist can only agree. In a psychic epidemic, the masses led and inspired by the few who are perversely possessed by and addicted to the need for power collectively collude with, support, and mutually rein in each other's irrational beliefs, narcissistic needs, and fears, creating a culture crazy beyond belief. The American world. America. The culture of lack thereof is simultaneously the case and effect of their madness as they collectively incarnate a living, self-fulfilling prophecy. They become the instruments through which the NLD, the non-local demon, reproduces itself like a multi-headed hydra, and as in, as, and through the field. Blessings and drag. Jung writes, this state of possession shows itself almost without exception in the fact that the possessed identity themselves, with the archetypal contents of their unconscious, and because they do not realize that the role which is being thrust upon them is the effect of new contents still to be understood. They exemplify these concretely in their own lives, thus become prophets and reformers in the negative sense, such as falling into a megalomaniacal inflation. And people who have been swallowed up by the archetype and fallen into the unconscious, instead of shedding light on integrating the meaning of the activated unconscious contents within themselves, are unwittingly acting out the mythic symbolic dimension of the role which is being thrust upon them. In concretized literal form on the stage of life, the new contents are understood when we realize that the role in cosmic drama, realize the role which is coming through us has its origin in the collective unconscious itself, as if we are playing a role in a cosmic drama. In addition to bestowing upon us a choice of how we want to play this role, the realization snaps us out of personally identifying with the role as well, and the part of us that has been unconsciously possessed becomes liberated, creating more consciousness in the process. When we become taken over by the unconscious, to quote Jung, the unconscious is in large measure ousts and supplants the function of the conscious mind. The unconscious usurps the reality function and substitutes its own reality. Unconscious thoughts manifest themselves in senseless, unshakable judgments upheld in the face of reality. When we find ourselves ignoring factual evidence and holding a magical belief that we rationally know not to be true, we are under a spell being driven by the unconscious, which is at that point in the driver's seat. The psychic factors which make possession possible are suggestibility, lack of critical discernment, unwillingness to inability to self-reflect, fearfulness, propensity to superstition and prejudice. The contents that take us over when we are possessed by the unconscious appears as phobias, exaggerated effects, peculiar convictions, idiosyncrasies, stubborn plans, compulsions and obsessions, all of which are not open to discussion or correction. Boy, I mean, I have these things. We all have fight with these things in our daily lives, and you know, but again, hopefully I have enough time. I think I do to talk a bit about our intuition. Demons work through our psyche, managing our perceptions in a way such that we aren't able to see their influence. Demons bedazzle, bewitch, and bedevil unconsciousness, bedevil consciousness in such a way that we become blind to our own underlying assumed viewpoint. We fall under their spell when we become entranced by our own version of reality in such a way so as to think the world objectively exists as we perceive it, separate from our own mind. In other words, we fall under the powers of the demons when we become fixated in our non-negotiable viewpoint and imagine that what we are seeing objectively exists in solid form outside of ourselves, in a way that applies to everyone. We then draw to ourselves all the evidence we need to prove to ourselves the seeming truth of our self-evident viewpoint, confirming our delusion that we are separate from and not participating in helping to create the very situation we find ourselves in, which we are ultimately creating. I call this a participatory delusional syndrome, or ADS for short. But, you know, it's a delusional separation. And we all go through this. I mean, we all fight these aspects. And that's why it's so important to know who you are, why you are, and to know that you are on the right track and not being swayed by, you know, by delusional thought. On the other hand, we break the spell of the demons when we realize that every moment of our experience is inseparable from our own consciousness, which is to recognize the fluid, non-objective, and thus dreamlike nature of reality. Just like figures in a dream, the demons are, ultimately speaking, our own energy. Our own energy, not separate from our own mind. Just like a dream, the way we observe the world literally evokes the very world we are observing. This means that it is through our awareness itself that we can intervene in the underlying matrix of creation and find the leverage point where we can change the walking dream we are having, which is evolution in action. Interestingly, we wouldn't have woken up and had this realization without the antagonistic cooperation of the demons, which is to say the demons are secretly allies in disguise, catalysts of consciousness appearing as adversaries, blessings in drag. And that's pretty much what they are. I mean, whenever you're faced with these, with conflicts, brought on by yourself or brought on by others, these are entities that are within you that are outside of you that are trying either to break into you or that are trying to break out of you and trying to possess you. Yeah. And it's only through your own knowledge and through your own faith, through your own guidance, through your own understanding, which is a God-given gift. Even children have it. It's obvious in children, it's obvious in all of us, that what is right or wrong, what is feels right or feels wrong. And I'll explain that if we have time more tonight. I'll get into the concept of intuition. Not the only one. Jung writes, the psychological rule says that when an inner situation is not made conscious, it happens outside as fate. To the extent that we are not consciously working or integrating via the process of individuation, the unconscious contents and conflicts that are activated within us is the extent to which these psychic contents will manifest externally and be unconsciously acted out collectively in a literal, concrete way on the world stage. Jung comments, one shouldn't evade this conflict by escaping into a premature and anticipated state of redemption. Otherwise, one provokes it in the outside world, and that is of the devil. An activated psychic content not realized consciously in the course of individuation manifests externally, where it gets dreamed up in as and through the outer world. To use Jung's metaphor, the sponsor of this project is the devil. And Jung says the world powers that rule over all mankind, for good or ill, are unconscious psychic factors. They are steeped in a world that was created by our own psyche. This brings to mind various quotes in the Bible about powers and principalities that rule over humanity, which is the metaphysically equivalent expression of our psychological situation. The Gospel of Luke, for example, as the devil say, that the kingdom of the world are under his control. And the Gospel of John speaks of the devil as the ruler of the world. And the first letter of John says that the whole world lies in the power of the evil one. And Paul speaks of Satan as the god of this world. And whether we call it a demon or an unconscious psychic factor, the force that rules over us is created by an expression of our own psyche. So in other words, how we deal with the devil is how we accept the world. Reflecting upon the First World War, Jung says, when fate for 4 whole years played out a war of monumental frightfulness on the stage of Europe, a war that nobody wanted, nobody dreamed of asking exactly who or what had caused the war and its continuation. Similarly, in today's war on terror, a war that nobody, or at least very few people want, we need to dream of asking exactly who or what has caused this war and its continuation. Jung continues, nobody realizes that European man was possessed by something which robbed him of all free will. And this state of unconscious possession will continue undeterred until we Europeans become scared of our God Almightiness or inflation, such as such a change can begin only with individuals, for the masses are blind brutes, as we know to our cost. The real carrier of life is the individual, and real transformation doesn't come through mass movements or new legislation, but via change within the individual. That's what Gandhi said. You have to become the change that you wish to be and that you wish for. And speaking about the effects of being identified with, possessed, and inflated by the unconscious, Jung writes, everything that exceeds a certain human size evokes equally inhuman powers in man's unconscious. Totalitarian demons are called forth. As a result of becoming overly one-sided in a multi-sided universe, totalitarian demons are dreamed up both within the unconscious and synchronistically out in the world. Events in the outer world are symbolic reflections of what we are dreaming inside of ourselves. What this means is that the most effective way to change the world is to change ourselves. Jung writes, the historic events of our time have painted a picture of man's psychic reality in indelible colors of blood and fire, and given him an object lesson which he will never be able to forget if, and this is the great question, he has today acquired enough consciousness to keep up with the furious pace of the devil within him. Will we, each one of us, be able to mediate, channel, and transform the archetypical demonic energy which is flowing through us into creativity such that we can constructively build a new world? This is the question upon whose answer rests the future survival of destruction of the world as we know it. Jung says, mankind, because of its scientific and technological development, has in increasing measure delivered itself over the danger of possession. Man's worst sin is unconsciousness. When shall we, in all seriousness, seek ways and means to exorcise him, to rescue him from possession and unconsciousness, and make this the most vital task of civilization? When shall we take the most vital task of civilization, the exorcism of the demons that are possessing us? In other words, when shall we make our most vital task waking up? Jung saw this present-day manifestation of the demonic as an archetypical expression of the potentially catastrophic upheavals that accompany the great transitions from one age to the next. When an archetype like the demonic appears, both within ourselves and out in the world, things become critical, with possibilities of both good and evil alike. How things actually turn out depends upon how consciousness responds to the situation. During a collective manifestation of the demonic, such as we have today, the great danger is a mass movement where millions or even billions of people fall into their unconscious together, igniting a psychic epidemic which spawns an apocalyptic war that ravages life on Earth and destroys the biosphere of the planet. To quote Jung, the unconscious work sometimes with the most amazing cunning, arranging certain fatal situations, fatal experiences, and make people wake up. Catastrophe can only be avoided if enough people wake up to what is being revealed to us as we act out the unconscious, and then connect with each other so as to deactivate, assimilate, and transform the potentially deleterious effects of the activated demon. That's what we're trying to do tonight. That's what we're trying to do, is bringing this article out. That's what Mr. Levy tried to do by writing this. We can then, under the guidance of the self, our intrinsic wholeness, help each other to usher in a new era of sustainable peace, understanding, and mutual cooperation. Our very continued existence as a species on this planet, on this beautiful planet, depends upon this realization. To be pessimistic and think that we can't change the trajectory of our species' suicidal, trance-like behavior is to be under a spell. They have fallen under a demon's curse. In having fallen under such a spell, we only strengthen and solidify our spellbound conviction, by acting as if there are no other possible outcomes. And that is apathy, and that is indifference, and, pessimism. Pessimism is good for the demons. It is crazy not to invest our energy, not to invest our creative energy into envisioning that we can come together, and just as crazy to imagine that we can't. If we aren't investing our creative imagination in ways for us to heal and wake up, then what are we thinking? Just like a dream at night, when enough of us become lucid in the waking dream of life, we can connect with each other and put our lucidity together, changing the world in positive ways in the process. Excuse me, I'm going to have a drink here. If people tell me I am a dreamer, when I profess these idealistic and seemingly naive beliefs, I will simply say, to quote the late John Lennon, I am not the only one. There are ever-expanding numbers of us, millions and billions, around the planet, who in various ways are being drafted by the self to be channels for a deeper process of awakening, enabling a vast range of entirely new and previously unimagined possibilities to become available to us. The universe is dreaming itself awake through us. When enough of us simply recognize the deeper archetypal pattern that is happening, that the universe is waking itself up through us, we can come together. I imagine, and help each other to deepen and stabilize our mutually shared awakening, what I call dreaming ourselves awake. As wounded healers, shamans, dreamers, and artists whose canvas is life itself, we can collaboratively create an art happening called global awakening. The real demon is our own ego clinging. To the extent we are under the seeming influence of a demon is the extent to which we are clinging and grasping, trying to hold on to our concept of ourselves as a discrete and separate self, when in actuality there is nothing to hold on to. To the extent we are clinging or grasping, we have fallen into the self-reinforcing habitual pattern of contracting ourselves against ourselves. And in so doing, we are blocking our own light. We can, and in this moment, step out of our own way and let our light shine. There. And just a note, a pioneer in the field of spiritual emergence, Paul Levy is a healer in private practice, assisting others who are also awakening to the dreamlike nature of reality. Paul is also a visionary artist and a spiritually informed political activist. He is the author of The Madness of George Bush, A Reflection of Our Collective Psychosis, which is available on his website, awakeninthedream.com. And I found his work to be very, very good. Awakeninthedream.com. And as I stated, I wanted to briefly go to another essay that I, or it's more, it's not so much an essay, it's actually a lecture given by Ian Zell-Lungold, and I have it bookmarked here, and hopefully I can find it. I've got a ton of bookmarks, unfortunately. What it talks about, essentially, is the folks, hang on. What this particularly states is in this particular part of his lecture, which I'm going to hopefully refer to before the end of the show, is that it explains the intuition and how we will become so dependent upon that now more than any other time in history. Because of what is transpiring, you know, and how seemingly out of control everything is and is becoming, bear with me here. I have several of his remarks. I just want to be able to find the right one. I just had it just a little earlier. There we go. All right, and I'm going to refer you to this website too. It's called Welcome to the Revolution. I'm sorry, Welcome to the Evolution by Ian Lungold, and that's the name of the site too. And it goes and. What's on the front page is actually his whole lecture. I might have enough time to read this, okay? He talks about the mind, and he talks about what we just spoke about, which is basically a collective psychosis, it happens. And that's going to happen again now as we enter the sixth night of the galactic period of the Mayan calendar, and which predicted in 2012 to, you know, actually October 28th, 2011, is when the seventh day begins, that, you know, we will be at an end of space and time as we know it. We'll be entering a new era of human evolution. And this segment here of this lecture I want to read to you. We still have 10 minutes or more. This is his words. I do want to point out something very important. As bad as all that waste and horror of World War II, it sure as hell wasn't 250 million years of meteor bombardment, was it? As a matter of fact, in World War II, 97% of all life didn't go extinct, did it? Some people worried about when the bomb went off that it would cause a nuclear winter, an ice age global-wide. Didn't happen. As much as Hitler hated the Jewish people, they did not go extinct like the Neanderthals did. And when the Third Reich fell, there wasn't 30 years of war that waged across Europe like when Rome fell, or 130, no, it wasn't 30 years, right? But now animals have rights back here, planetary. You know, women didn't have any rights. You were, women were animals, were treated as animals. They were property. You understand? Things are getting better, dramatically better, and you should expect it to get even better. Go ahead. A little bit of dissatisfaction is worth it. So there's all this accelerating going on up, and it's going by stages, and it's getting faster and faster and faster. Now remember, 2 million years ago, we picked up this tool called the mind. Well, we're going to have a little bit of problem with that thing, and I want to talk about that right now. The mind is a tool, and it's a tool that consciousness uses to distinguish similarities and differences between things. Okay, it's a tool like a hammer or a saw. A carpenter doesn't think that he's his hammer. Well, not most of them. I know some guys that think they are their cars, but that's not true. Some people think that they are their mind. Get over that right away. You are not your mind or any of your thoughts. If you do hold to that, you are going to be in big trouble, and I'm going to show you. See, the mind, you don't hear about this in school. Especially, you don't hear about this kind of information. I took psychology classes, and no one in college ever talked to me about the flicker frequency. Have you ever heard of it? The reason you haven't heard of it is because the flicker frequency is very, very important in subliminal advertising, which of course you would never have experienced yourself. The mind works on a series of pictures, special effects. People know all about this. The flicker frequency is 24 frames per second. That's how fast your mind works. Your mind has a speed limit. Your mind can only think 24 thoughts in 1 second. It cannot make this action 24 times per second. It can only make this action 24 times per second, similarities and differences. It goes like a flip card, a strip. Here's a ball. Ball is coming, it bounces, and then it's going to bounce again. That's how the mind actually works. Has anybody here been in an accident? I don't want to bring up bad times, but sometimes that was really dangerous, something that was really dangerous, and you could have died. Did you see time slow down when you were in that accident? Yeah. Anybody see it go to stop motion? That was serious. What you just witnessed, and maybe some of you have some of that and maybe not, I'm telling you, and you guys can confirm it, these are peak experiences in your life. You still clearly remember exactly what happened, don't you? And the reason it was so powerful an experience is because it was a demonstration that you are not your mind. It demonstrated that your consciousness is not limited to how fast this thing works, the mind. But very powerful information. This flicker frequency, 24 frames per second, is as fast as your mind can work. Stress. The mind is a tool that is supposed to do its job, seeing the similarities and differences so that you can make decisions concerning your survival. Now, when the mind, which is a self-serving mechanism, when the mind understands that it can't do its job, or it's not adequately able to make good decisions about your future, it's got to build in, evolved in safety override system, and it goes in stages. The first stage of the safety override is called stress. When your mind is not sure of what's coming, it sends your body a signal. This is your walk away response. You're supposed to get up and walk away. Animals have this down really good. A dog will smell something weird and will just get up and leave. Us, on the other hand, we have had parents and teachers and now employers who would not have us get up and walk away, right? So we have adapted to stress. As a matter of fact, stress is a character evaluation on you. How much stress can you handle? That's right, because if you could handle more stress, you'd go further up the corporate ladder. That's really what the glass ceiling is on each person. How much stress can you handle? I was just going to say that most disability companies no longer accept stress as a reason for being away from work. You cannot get that coverage anymore as of 2 years ago. And this was written in 2004, I believe, or 2005. And meanwhile, doctors, the AMA, proclaim that 80% of everything that goes wrong with your body begins with stress. Stress is such an epidemic proportion that all the benefits that used to be afforded to workers for stress have been cut off. And everybody's got stress. It's a pandemic. Now, you guys kind of have a clue as to why. If you make a telephone call, you're hooked up to computers that are making something like 4.5 billion decisions per second. Your mind is doing 24 decisions per second. Consciousness is moving at least 5 billion decisions per second. Right? It's amazing. And do you understand that consciousness is as fast as you can realize? So now we're talking about nanoseconds, which is 100,000th of a second. Wow. Consciousness has just sped away from your mind. I used to be, when this territory was settled, the people who settled it built everything in their house from the foundation to the floor, to the windows, to the bunk beds, to the chairs, to the tables. Everything they built with their own hands, didn't they? And, except maybe the pump and the skillet. And everything else, they built it. They even had a certain amount of knowing about how to do it. They knew how to do it. Go ahead, go home and build a light bulb. That's the kind of thing is a source of stress. When your computer goes down, there's a whole lot that the mind doesn't know about, and it generates this stress. Like I said, it's a pandemic everywhere. Boy, that's for real. Now, I have about 3 minutes left to this, before I stop streaming. So I would like you to... if you're interested in this, you can make call in my number at the switchboard if I can go back and get it. You can continue listening. If not, please, if you're interested, go to the archives. And I'm going to continue. Fight or flight. Okay, you're supposed to handle a stress. You're supposed to adapt to stress, and stress builds. And as we've just seen, that this acceleration continues to accelerate. So what next? If you don't handle the stress, then you go into this. The mind goes into fight or flight. You're here. All logic is suspended. There is no similarity or difference anymore. It's just a drop of adrenaline in your system, and the body is supposed to either run away or fight its way out to preserve your way of survival. This is the mechanism. This fight or flight, this is desk rage, this is road rage, this is Columbine High School, this is terrorism and all wars. That's what this is, and that is on a massive increase, isn't it? Going unconscious. So what happens if you can't fight or flight, you can't run away? For instance, if you go in and punch the boss in the nose or your teacher, you're going to end up in jail or at least out of a job, right? So if you can't fight your way out and you can't run away, what's left? There's one last-ditch effort on the part of the mind and survive this unconsciousness. It's to survive this, it's unconsciousness. If you can't run away or fight your way out, then what you are supposed to do, if a bear attacks you, you're supposed to play dead. Maybe he'll only eat your arm. You've seen other animals use this technique, haven't you? And they get caught, and they just turn over on their back and their belly up, and they play dead. It's a survival tactic. Again, I'm going to lose you in about 1 minute, and I hope you can go to this. If you're interested, go to Welcome to the Evolution. I believe it's .com. I am Ian Lungo. Also, you can go to the MayanMatrix.com. I'm sorry, Mayan Magix. Mayan, M-A-Y-A-N, M-A-J-I-X.com. And you can find this out. I'm going to continue. This will be recorded in the archives. And I've only got a few more paragraphs to read. Going unconscious. What happens here? I'm sorry. Basically, this is a denial experience. And the Southern Bell done faint dead away. What happened here? Basically, this is a denial of experience. Or what happened here? Someone clubbed this woman in the head. She just decided to deny the experience, didn't she? You know, when the Southern Bell faints in the movies and so on. All addictions are a person's chosen method to remain unconscious. And it doesn't matter if it's alcohol or drugs or work or gambling or shopping or sitcoms. All addictions are a chosen method to stay unconscious. And how many people do you know, yourself excluded, are stuck in that sort of thing? A whole bunch of people, huh? You're started to get the impact of what this acceleration means. 400 years ago, people had lots of time to sit and ponder things before they changed. And 400 years ago, you had lots of 24ths of a second to work it out. Now it's not that way, and it's going to get faster and faster, or everybody you know, including yourself. This is a serious situation. This is why the world looks like it does. This is why the world looks like it's going to pieces, because it is. The mind was not built for speed. It was evolved when things were going a lot slower. And trying to keep your mind up to speed is sort of like taking your donkey for a run behind the family station wagon at 75 miles per hour. It's just not pretty. But that's what's happening to everyone, and it's going to get even more dramatic in the future. So, and it says, if not the mind, then what? I would venture to guess that this is different from what you expected. We were going to talk about the Mayan calendar. We are not talking about Indians and pyramids, no. We are talking about what's going on in our lives today and what's going to happen tomorrow. And we are going to go into what the point on how to resolve the situation that we've discovered, and how you can take this out of your friends and out to your friends and neighbors, and how you can help them resolve it too. You want to have some company, don't you? So we have this situation, and I think it's all registering on you, isn't it? So now it's pretty evident that we are all going to be going completely out of our minds. It's going to happen. So we might as well go ahead and look at it, at what it's what's out there, outside of your mind. What's out there? What's out there is your intuition. What is outside of your mind, your own mind, is your intuition, your own personal knowing, your own personal power. Intuition, your own knowing without having to rely on any outside information or evidence whatsoever, was given a death sentence by the Catholics during the Inquisition. They murdered over 4 million women for having intuition. There was a news story where the Pope was asking for forgiveness for what the Catholic Church had done during the Inquisition. Should we go ahead and forgive them? I think so. Those 4 million women, anybody who's professed to know something without first producing the actual physical evidence or how they came to know it was declared a witch, and they were burned and dragged and stabbed. They were persecuted. As a result, intuition went out of style, and we just put it on the shelf. The Catholics knew that they were doing something, that they were doing what they were doing, because this is your personal power. It's your own power, and you know the law of supply and demand. If everyone got power, then what's mine worth? If nobody got power and I've got it, mine's worth a whole lot more. And that's what they were doing to everyone. And that caught on, and it has been brought forth to the situation right we're in right now. And thank you, Pope, for asking for forgiveness. It's about time. Actually, it's the perfect time because we can now afford to forgive them because there is a larger understanding of what has been going on all over all this period. There is no fault here. There is a process. Hitler was just doing his job. Bushies, Rumsfelds, Ashcrofts, all those guys are doing a great job. They really are. Anybody wants their jobs? Go, guys. They are tearing down everything that the power structure stands for in a record time. Go, guys. We've got to get this stuff out of the way, and they are doing a wonderful job of it. You know, we pay athletes a lot of money, don't we? To play silly games, don't we? It's almost ludicrous, almost crazy, millions of dollars a year to go out and play a game. Are we nuts? Maybe not, because you see, these athletes, when they're out there under very stressful conditions, playing for a national championship with all kinds of money and your next year's career on the line, and all kinds of endorsements and all that under tremendous stress, instead of going into the fight and flight syndrome, which would have them kicked off the court or off the team, instead of doing that, these guys routinely go into the zone. They make this spectacular play under tremendous stress and everything happening all at once. They just go step back, see and know everything about the moment. Have you read any of those interviews with the quarterbacks or hockey players who see the play in slow motion? Have you heard about it? That's how they stay in the game, by being in the zone, riding their intuition. There is no time to think about it. If you think about it, you've lost. He's lost when a quarterback starts thinking about the game. His second string, third string, and out there making commercial. Being in the zone, being in their intuition is why we pay them the money, because they are doing something that we know is vitally important, something that we admire. We admire it, and that's why we pay for it. Those clothes that you're wearing, I bet that at some time or another you bought them, and the reason you paid anything for them is because you admired that apparel. And the more you admire something, the more it is worth for you, and the more you will pay. And that really is the basis of all exchange, is how much it is admired. You can even admire how much you hate something, or how much distaste you have for it, or how ugly something is, can't you? Ugh, that's ugly. It's an amount of admiration. In fact, it's what beings exchange. Beings exchange admiration rather than money or thoughts or communication. They really exchange admiration between one another. If you want to know where the economy is moving to, it's moving away from money, isn't it? It's moving into the exchange of admiration rather than physical goods. But this intuition, being in the zone, is very, very important. And since we are all going to be going out of our minds, oh, you still have one. It's sort of like you still have bodies. We're using those as a vehicle. You still have a mind. You can still add two and two and that kind of thing. But when it comes down to dealing with changes and the amount of rapid change that is coming, this is the only thing that will work, intuition. We will not have time to think it through. You will not have time to take the action. And when you're thinking, when you're using the mind, there, what's also in there is all the fears, doubts, and worry. Big clue, how do you know it's your intuition and not your mind? Your intuition is always, no matter the circumstance. And you guys, that were in the accidents. Remember, when you are engaged in your intuition, there is no fear. There was a calm certainty, a knowing of what to do. There was no time to worry about whether you were doing this right or wrong. It was direct action. Your intuition, no matter what or how dire the circumstances, your intuition will always be calm and knowing. Your mind, on the other hand, will throw in the kitchen sink. I've talked to some people who have shared experience about these accidents and whatnot. They made it through the experience, and other passengers and companions didn't survive the situation. And these people knew exactly why the passengers didn't survive, and they did. It was because they personally stayed right there in the moment. While the passenger was going, I'm denying this is happening at all. They were in the mind. The survivor was in their intuition. That's how important this is. 911 is a big topic. Who survived and who didn't? The people who followed their intuition and went fishing that morning instead of to work survived. The people who got down out of the building when the first plane hit, and including the second tower, the people who got out of the building followed their intuition and took a break, went home. They survived. The people who got out of the building then heard that all clear, and their boss is reminding them that they had customers on the West Coast that were selling stuff too, then got back into the elevators and went back up into the building, didn't they? And they didn't survive. That was the difference. The guys that went back up in the building had a reason. They had reasons for going back into the building. I've got to make that mortgage payment. You know, the kids got to summer school. They had reasons. I could get fired if I didn't go back. They had reasons, and they were in their minds rather than following their intuition. Just some examples. But this is going to become more and more critical as we go forward from here, more and more critical. Staying in the zone. I'm running late here, and I know that, but probably I should go on to the next. I might continue this into the next week. But I think I might extend this just tonight. Staying in the zone. Now, next problem. How do you find your intuition, and how do you keep it tuned in? Because, of course, we have all had the experience of our intuition. Usually it's fleeting. It's a little thing, and then it goes away, and then it's clouded by all this doubt about was that even my own and all that stuff. The mind just jumps right on you. This mind thing is not your friend, friends. It's a parasitic self-indulgent self-preservation mechanism. It would rather be right than you be alive. The mind. You've probably had friends who denied there was anything wrong with them because the mind said they can't have that can't happen. That can't be there. It's not right. Wouldn't go for treatment, let alone alternative treatment. And they aren't here anymore. They were right until they kicked it. This is not a fairy tale. The mind would rather be right in a lot of people than be alive. So getting a good grip on this thing is really important, and having this intuition engaged really puts the mind in its place, where it becomes just a tool rather than an identity. So how do you do that? Well, intuition is your own personal knowing, right? And all-knowing. All-knowing comes from a source. We don't have to give it a name. It just comes from somewhere. It comes in a flow of creation. See, the source of this flow would necessarily be the source of all-knowing, because it's the source of this, of all that exists is coming this way. So here we have your consciousness in this flow of event, quicker and quicker and quicker. Your consciousness is oriented by time and place in this flow. You have noticed that when you've had an intuitive moment, that time doesn't go by at all. And until way later, and you go, where'd all the time go? But for that time, you were still being there. In one moment, it was a flow. That is a schematic of how this works. And I've been there. We've all been there to some extent, when especially when we're in the creative flow. When you are in your intuition, you're centered in that flow of information. The trick is to stay there. It's not so easy, and everything that's going on, and with the mind preying on you. But the Maya had two things on their side. One, things were going slower. But they had a couple of other orientations. other consciousness. Our society is oriented by time and place, physical, physical, physical. The Maya had some other help. They had this orientation right here, which is called personal intent, 1 through 13. Have you ever been someplace that you didn't really intend to be, like at school or work or the middle of an argument? Did you feel centered or did you feel uncentered? Well, did you feel centered or were you off-centered? Me too. When I was someplace really, when I was someplace I didn't really intend to be, I felt off-centered. These guys, the Maya, knew their personal intent. They had that orientation. So it was easier for them to recognize when they were doing what they were intended to do for this lifetime. They would help keep your centered, that would help you keep centered, wouldn't it? And right away, if you felt that wasn't happening, you'd get back on to what you were supposed to do. And they also had the major orientation right here called the divine plan. In our civilization, there is no plan. It's been 16 billion years of happy little accidents that ended up with you sitting on that chair. That's the way our science looks at it. It might as well have been an explosion in a chemical factory that produced you here. There was no divine plan. These guys had a divine plan. They knew that there was 20 different aspects of creation, geometry, 20-sided figure. This personal intent and this orientation to the divine plan, that is the recognition of your part in the divine plan that produces a symbol in the Mayan civilization. This diagram has a name. It's called the Eighth Division Sky Place. And that symbol stands for heaven. And you've been there. There are moments in your life when you were oriented by time and place. You knew you were doing what you desired or wanted to do. And you knew you were part of something much larger than yourself. Felt cool, didn't it? Heavenly, huh? This is the importance of the calendar. The Mayan calendar was never about time. It was always about measuring and keeping track of the flow of creation and the intent of creation and the aspect of creation every single day. And remember, there is one law in the universe. What you pay attention to, become conscious of. So what if every day you were paying attention to the energy of this flow of creation, what would you become conscious of? So would it be easier to have your consciousness attuned to your intuition? Easier, isn't it? All that good, easier, isn't it? That good a word, it's automatic, without any effort, without any thinking about it. I mean, no meditating. I mean, just forget it. You look in the morning to see what the intent of creation is for the day. Then you go and live your life. The Maya wrote every morning and celebrated the day for the, woke every morning and celebrated the day for the purpose it served on creation, and then went and lived their lives every day. I think I'm going to stop only because I'm losing voice here. And I'm way over my time. But let me just finish with this paragraph, and then I think I might pick this up next week. Probably should finish it tonight because there's not much left. But entrainment. You know what the word entrainment is? Entrainment is the automatic syncopation of life forms or even mechanical objects. Science doesn't have a good idea of why it happens, but they sure know it happens. One example is a baby and a mother when they're nursing. Her and the baby's hearts go into rhythm. They beat at the same time. That's called entrainment, the natural matching up. It works for objects too. If you take cuckoo clocks in a clock store, for instance, and they are all ticking at different times, within a week or so, they will all be ticking and talking at exactly the same time. It's called entrainment. What this is a tool to entrain your consciousness to the flow of creation. 13 and 20, and it goes 1 through 13, and it goes through these different aspects of all creation, all 20 of them. It starts again and weaves, and it's a weave of those two numbers. And you can go way into thinking about it, and it will do you no good whatsoever. It's only that you don't think about it, but wake up just knowing from inside that does you any benefit. I know that sounds completely backwards from anything you have ever been taught in school. Well, we're not in school, are we? Consciousness, knowing differences. A side note, a part of this, is that consciousness is the awareness of being aware. And we've been talking about this mind as a tool that consciousness uses to see the similarities and differences between things. Consciousness overall has a job to do. Consciousness divides creation. It divides it. If you ever noticed that when you are really conscious, you can see the veins in a leaf, or you can see the different colors on a butterfly's wing, or you can count the stars. But when you're upset and maybe you're not conscious and not so conscious, everything kind of looks the same. Have you ever noticed that? The more conscious you are, the more divisions there are in your experiences, and the less conscious you are, the more prejudiced you are. Have you noticed that? And where everything and all the experiences with all the people look the same. The job of consciousness is to notice the differences. And that's how you count your blessings. That's how you appreciate the experience, by looking and picking out the differences. So consciousness divides, the Mayan calendar says it divides by 13. All consciousness is divided by 13 in increments of 13 and 13 and 13. And 13 is the number by which consciousness operates. No wonder 13 is unlucky and satanic. Well, creation has a job too. Creation, I mean, all of creation multiplies, and all of creation multiplies by the factor of 20 times. Has anybody here studied biology? I mean, the very beginning of the egg, the single egg, and on, it multiplies by 20. That's how you got so big. It's through multiplication of your own cells, and it does it in factors of 20 from top to bottom. Interestingly, huh? So by following how this weave goes through 13 and 20, basically that's what we are talking about. This rectangle, just as being aware of that, it entrains your consciousness to all the interplay of consciousness and creation. And there is nothing you can think about that going to help. It's just that you end up knowing. Your intuition kicks in, and you end up in the right place, meeting the right people, doing the right thing. That's what's going to get us through this. I'm not saying that this is the only way to do that. It's saying that this one works all the time, and that's why this is important. And peace of mind. There is something else I want to do, and I want to do. Peace of mind has lots to do with intuition. When you have peace of mind, intuition occurs. In fact, in order to have peace of mind, the only time you can possibly have peace of mind is when you are centered. Isn't that true? It's only when you are in this position, center point, that you can have peace of mind. And okay, how do you get centered? There is only really one time that you can be centered. That's when you are certain. When you are certain, then you are centered. And okay, where does certainty come from? There is only one source of certainty, the recognition of patterns. The recognition of patterns. Remember the first time that you were trying to learn how to drive. Did you have peace of mind? Were you centered? Were you centered? You didn't recognize the patterns yet, did you? Where does the key go? Which way do you turn it? which is the gas, which is the brake, which is the clutch, which way do I move this lever, which way is the guy going to stop, what is the guy doing stopping right in front of me. All those patterns. Anybody taking dance lessons, two-step, I did, square dance, tango, the more you recognize the pattern, the more certain you get, the more centered you are on the dance floor, and where you have peace of mind dancing in front of your friends, hundreds of people, it's what you've been doing your whole life. In every case, to learn something, you've got to recognize the pattern to become certain, become centered, and you have peace of mind about the subject. Being certain. Now we have the pattern that we can prove. You can be certain. Of course, it takes your own certainty. I've got mine. I have studied and have my own certainty about this pattern, centering and peace of mind about it. But it's now available. A pattern of the last 16.4 billion years of everything that's happened. And in fact, the pattern shows that everything, that things are getting better and better. No matter what it looks like at the time, we are evolving. The situation is getting better and better and better. That will go forward into our future too. As ethics is scheduled to overcome power, just like power overcame law. And have you recognized that? Law overcame reason, didn't it? We studied the law quite a bit just previous to coming here, about 20 months, and there is very little reason for our sanity in the way laws are written. Laws overcame reason. Actually, I should point this out. During the fourth day of this cycle, planetary law overcame reason. In the fourth section of this right here, between 1874 and 1894, was the that's when Rockefeller and Carnegie and Westinghouse all were becoming corporate powers that overcame the laws of nations and people. So we have ethics coming in right now, and during the fourth day, which is 2005, ethics will overcome power. We are just watching the throes of a dying animal right now. It's going to look bad, but there is lots of good parts, lots of goodness past it. So peace of mind comes when you are centered. Centeredness comes from certainty, and certainty comes from the recognition of these patterns. So you can look out there and see what's going on and know with certainty that things are getting better. It's going to be very important. You're outnumbered. There are more people worried than certain. There are more people afraid of the future than looking forward to it. That you know. You are outnumbered. So it is very important that you have this as down as you can get it. In our, and you can go to his webpage, and he states, we have the webpage and articles and dates and places to look up data and match the dates so that you yourself can research and don't rely on me or anyone. And that's the end of his lecture. So we are now. In 2009 will be a time of getting used to bliss. It's going to take some practice. We have been so involved in everything going wrong that we are going to have to get used to it because. Or be able to create things going right. It's going to be like learning to walk or live all over again. And this all leads towards what we are talking about here. So we have to learn. We have to learn these things. Again, we have to learn, and we're entering a serious time. But October 28, 2011, the end of the Mayan calendar, when we are consciously co-creating our experience, time travel is all in here too. So if you can travel in time anywhere you want, what good is a calendar? The whole idea of time and space goes extinct as orientation. That's what's in our future. We do have this hump to get over with the governments and the economy, yes. If time travel becomes normal, are you saying we could have it in our past as well? I'm not sure. I know it's coming. I know that we're already time-traveled electrons in the laboratory. So so then we could meet people who have died. Possibly everything is becoming more and more possible. Pretty hard to conceive, isn't it? It really is. It's sort of like being 4 years old and your mom is pulling stuff out of the top shelf. And you know stuff is up there, but you don't know what it is. And you're just not at that stage yet. And that's how we all are right now. A little in response. So I think there's very little left to go here. But I think I'll end it there. So there's a lot happening, folks, and it's going to get bigger. It's going to get better. But just bear with it. And we'll get there. And I think that's the way we have to look at it. And hopefully we'll all know come October 28th, 2011. And with that, I'm going to end the show. I want to thank you very much for joining us. And join us tomorrow night with our guest, George Dixon. Thanks.